When you live in the 28th Assembly District in the St. Croix River Valley, Madison can seem pretty far away. And indeed, on a day-to-day basis, folks living there are often drawn more to Minnesota for work, shopping, and play. But the legislator representing the 28th has a duty to advocate for those residents in Madison and to reflect their needs. Coming up, we hear from the two candidates hoping to have that job. It's the 28th Assembly District debate, coming up on the West Side. And a good morning to you. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Joining us today are Kim Butler of Balsam Lake. She and her husband own a small internet-based business in Milltown. She's currently the chair of the Democratic Party for Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District and chair of the Polk County Democratic Party. Kim Butler, welcome to the West Side.
Good morning, Dean. Thank you for having me.
Gay Magnifici is the Republican incumbent state representative for the 28th District. She is a retired pediatric registered nurse. She and her husband own a small business together as well. Gay Magnifici, welcome to the West Side.
Well, thank you, Dean, and thank you for having both of us here today.
You bet. The 28th District, by the way, includes most of Polk County, the southwestern half of Burnett County, and a small part of northwestern St. Croix County. There are two cities in the district, Amory and St. Croix Falls. Villages in the district include Somerset, Osceola, Frederick, Grantsburg, Balsam Lake, Centuria, Milltown, Dresser, Siren, and Webster. This is normally where we tell you the telephone number and the email address to reach us. The telephones are full, but this is your chance to hear what the candidates have to say on the issues that matter to you. As a line clears, you can join the conversation by calling at 800-228-5615. If you'd rather not wait, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. So Republicans have been elected to this seat since 2010. Kim Butler, you ran for the 28th Assembly seat in 2018 and lost to your Gay Magnifici by 18 points. So why run again this time around?
Well, because I still feel that the priorities that I have are priorities that the district has as well. And I think that we need a strong voice for Western Wisconsin in Madison because I don't feel like our rural concerns are necessarily being heard. I did lose, but I also gained over the previous Democrat that ran, and I outperformed many of the winning Democrats on the ticket, receiving more votes than Governor Evers and pretty much every other Democrat except Senator Baldwin. And so I feel like there was definite growth and there's room for more. This is an unusual election year, and anything can happen at this point.
Gay Magnifici, you're hoping to win your second term representing the 28th. What fuels your interest in the state legislature?
Well, I'm still interested in trying to improve health care, protect our property rights, our liberty, our freedom. I still want a smaller, more efficient government, and I want to reduce the tax burden. And I would help support businesses because they are the engines of our economy, and I protect the lives of the unborn.
So let's go to the phone since we have full phone lines. Bring in Steve from Webster. Steve, thanks for joining the West Side. Your question for the candidates.
Yeah, I've been following the chronology of COVID-19 here in northwestern Wisconsin. And, of course, we had very few cases while Governor Evers' Safer at Home order was in place. But if you look at the number of cases after the order was struck down by the Republicans, they've just spiked here. We've currently got 141 in Polk County. We've got 531 in St. Croix County, and we had just a handful before that. Now we've had a mask mandate issued by the governor, but the Republicans are intent on striking that down as well. However, under the mask mandate, cases have plateaued throughout most of Wisconsin, but not here in northwestern Wisconsin. They've continued to grow rapidly. And so I'm wondering how each of the candidates feel about that.
Thank you, Steve. And I'm going to drop you so you can listen on the radio so we can open up another phone line. But according to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, all three counties in the 28th Assembly District, Burnett, Polk, and St. Croix, have high activity levels of the coronavirus. That designation is determined by a rate case, a case rate of per 100,000 people over a two-week period. So far across all three counties, and I'm throwing a lot of numbers out, but we'll get to the gist of this. Of the three counties in the district, 687 positive cases have been reported. Now, some of the cases would be outside the district because most of St. Croix County is outside the district. Half of Burnett is. Eight people have died, though, in those three counties. More than 90% of the cases in those three counties have come since the Republican leadership in the legislature won its case in the state Supreme Court to strike down the Evers administration's Safer at Home order 3 months ago yesterday. So, Gay Magnifici, let's start with you. Did your party's leadership act too hastily in removing the state restrictions?
I don't think so. First of all, just let me say I care about the health and safety of everyone. And wearing a mask should be a choice, not a mandate. Respecting personal space and practicing good hygiene. Wash your hands frequently with soap and water. And if you can't do that, use hand sanitizer if the soap and water is not available. And then just try not to touch your face. But I just don't feel that it's the government's job to protect my health. It's my job, my personal responsibility to protect my own health.
Kim Butler, the Safer at Home efforts to flatten the curve of COVID-19 crushed the state's economy. How could the state have handled the pandemic better?
Well, I think it starts at the top with the way that relief money has been spread out to businesses. And unfortunately, a lot of our small businesses did not get the kind of money that they needed to stay afloat and to pay their employees and to keep them on board. And we've all seen that some of that government money went to big corporations who are much better prepared to be able to weather economic storms like this. So that was my first frustration. I also think that had we stayed with the Safer at Home order and kept those cases low, that like other countries, we might be opening back up by now. But because we didn't, and the Republicans struck down the order and didn't have a plan themselves, there was no comparable Badger bounce-back plan in place, we just started flying blind, and everybody did what they want to do. And as much as we want to wish this virus away and pretend it's not here, we can't do that. With regards to public health, in a pandemic, we need leadership from the top, and much of the media has been confusing. There's a lot of confusing information out on the internet. People, quack doctors, saying things that are contradictory to what the Centers for Disease Control say. And so it's no wonder that people are confused, which is why we do need leadership saying you need to wear a mask. And we have people like Dr. Michael Osterholm from Minnesota, who's a respected epidemiologist, as well as Neil Kashkari, who is the Republican head of the Federal Reserve, saying that if we did a mask mandate and shut things down, we'd be back. And that's what everybody wants. We want our kids in school safely. We want our businesses open safely. But we're just drawing this out by not doing the things that we need to do.
Yes, Steve referenced the governor's mask order, which started 2 weeks ago, lasts through the 28th of September. Many law enforcement agencies in the state have said they won't enforce it, and there are hints by the Republican legislative leadership that they might gather to overturn it. Kim Butler, you claim to be a proponent of local control. Aren't mask regulations better handled on the local level?
That's a good one, and trust me, I've been wrestling with that because I am in favor of local control. I think that our schools, individual school districts, should be deciding whether they think it's safe to open up. What happens in Milwaukee is very different than what happens at Unity or Siren school districts. But as far as masks, it's been proven. The science is there. We wear masks. We cut the transmission. We flatten the rate. And we get rid of it sooner. Other countries have led the way on this. They've given us the scientific evidence that we need to prove that masks are effective. You know, I don't want to wear a mask. I have asthma. I have lung conditions. But I wear one because I feel that that's my duty to do so. I want to protect other people. I want to protect my family. So, yeah, it's... Generally, I don't like overreaching state government control, but I think in this instance, in a pandemic, that we need to swallow hard and put our masks on.
Now, Gay Magnifici, a statewide poll released this week by Marquette University Law School shows that 69% of state respondents surveyed favor a statewide mask mandate. You've expressed willingness to support a joint resolution in the Assembly to overturn Governor Evers' mandate that everyone wear a mask in public. Why do you oppose the governor's mask mandate?
I was really disappointed with the governor's lack of collaboration with the legislature before issuing this mandate. I still believe our local governments, businesses, and citizens have already done a great deal to appropriately and safely respond to the virus. And I think a statewide approach is not the best interest to the folks up here in Northwest Wisconsin. And as a nurse, I'm out and about, I'm watching people with their masks on. I'm not opposed to that. It should be their choice, their right to wear one if they want. But I see them taking them off, putting them in the pocket or putting them in the purse. Mm-hmm. I've even some people, they take their mask off, smoke a cigarette, put the mask back on. I'm not sure. And it's your hands. If you have clean hands, you don't touch your face. That is probably the best thing to do. So I just don't see why it should be a mandate.
We're speaking with the candidates for the 28th Assembly District seat in the Wisconsin legislature in the election that's coming up in November. It's part of our series of legislative debates that we'll be holding for the next several months. We're hearing from Gay Magnifici, the current state representative, who is a Republican from Dresser, and Kim Butler, the Democratic challenger from Balsam Lake. Staying on the topic of COVID-19 and its impact, schools are getting ready for the new academic year. Starts just in a few weeks now. Some districts in the 28th are offering in-person classes, Amory and Grantsburg among them. Gay Magnifici, what are you hearing from parents and teachers in the district, and can state government play a role in the safe reopening of schools?
I've been hearing a lot from parents from all over the district, and I was very happy to hear that the schools here are going to be open with face-to-face instruction 5 days a week. I just believe in local control, and I think each district is doing a great job to make sure everyone stays safe. They have plans in place. I mean, should the situation change and there's an outbreak, then they will do something else, but I think many parents from around the district are in support of this. The shutdown this spring hurt so many of the rural and low-income families, and also the kids with special needs. I just believe our teachers are essential workers, and education of our children is also essential.
I mentioned the Grantsburg District. A majority of respondents to their survey indicated they did want their kids going back to school for 5 days a week. Those feelings aren't uniform everywhere. Kim Butler, how can schools in the 28th district reopen safely and serve students effectively in the midst of a pandemic? And is there anything you could do if you were a legislator to help?
Well, I think that the crux of it is the lack of child care, that many parents are feeling pressured because they need to work. And to try and work, whether they have essential worker jobs where they don't have a choice to stay home, which is probably a lot of the 28th district, or whether they are fortunate enough to be able to work remotely from home. It's still difficult to manage child care, to manage virtual education, and that's what's lacking here. What the state could do, I think, as a legislator, I would want to figure out some way to make sure that every family had internet based on their income. So in some cases, it would be free. I know the schools are bending over backward to make sure that all students get electronic devices, but the internet is still a big problem in this issue, in this area. Lack of it. I just spent a couple days hanging out in front of the public library doing work on my computer because I don't have internet where I was, and I don't have unlimited data on my phone anymore. And I couldn't help but think what it's like to be a third grader sitting in the back of mom's car at 6 o'clock at night doing your homework. So the schools are in between a rock and a hard place. Parents want their kids back in school. The kids are falling behind, although they are all falling behind a uniform rate. And the saddest thing, too, as Gay mentioned, is that children with special needs are falling perhaps back the most because they need education professionals. But I've talked to a lot of teachers, and they're worried. They're scared for the health of themselves, of their families. And it strikes me as odd that Gay would bring up her support of local control when, in fact, she's one of the legislators who signed a letter pressuring schools across the state to open with in-person classes. And, you know, that just doesn't apply if you're in a larger school district. They need to be able to make those decisions themselves, and pressuring them with veiled threats of taking away money or giving money to private schools is not the collaborative way to work with schools that they need right now.
Gay Magnifici, do you want to respond to that since she called you out on a particular situation?
Yeah, I mean, I did send out a letter to the school superintendents, but like I said, I just feel that we're different up here. We need a regional approach to this problem, and I'm just responding to what people have called me wanting their kids back in school.
It's our 28th Assembly District debate. Democrat Kim Butler of Balsam Lake, Republican incumbent Gay Magnifici of Dresser are with us. I'm asking the questions, but you can too, and you can call 800-228-5615. We do have one line open now, 800-228-5615, or email ideas@WPR.org. Alan and Mark from Amory, William from Frederick, will get to your questions coming up. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the 28th Assembly District debate on the West Side. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Our candidates are Gay Magnifici, the Republican incumbent from Dresser, and Kim Butler of Balsam Lake, the Democratic challenger. Before we leave the topic of COVID-19 and its effects, I do want to talk about voting in this election, which is affected by everything that's been going on. Kim Butler is chair of the Polk County Democrats. You spend some of your time dealing with voting issues. How concerned are you with voting safety and accurate counting this election season when the demand for absentee ballots has increased dramatically and some voters just feel uncomfortable about going to their polling place?
I'm very concerned. I want to give a shout out to our amazing municipal clerks who have taken on an unprecedented and unexpectedly enormous workload, and they are just rising to the challenge and doing their wonderful, normal, accurate job in dealing with this. I'm very concerned about our mail system slowdown right now. It's affecting me personally. I have medication that has taken, you know, a week when it normally takes a day to get refilled. I have a package that's been sitting in Eau Claire postal facility since July 28th. And this is disturbing when it comes to ballots. The other thing is that people say, oh, it's so easy to do online absentee ballot requesting. And it's not. If you don't have internet, if you don't have a smartphone, if you are not technologically savvy, it is hard. I've had to walk through people to try and get their ID uploaded. I've been willing to go to somebody's house with my portable printer and print out a copy of their driver's license. So it is a challenge for older people. Fortunately, the clerks are rising to that as well and helping people, as is the League of Women Voters and the Democratic Party. And I'm sure probably that county Republican parties are helping voters as well. But there is a definite challenge to getting an absentee ballot. Now people are worried about the mail. So all I can say is if you do want to vote absentee to be absolutely safe, you should request your ballot now for November. As much as a candidate as I love to vote for myself at the poll and, you know, take that selfie outside the door, I'm not doing that. I've already requested my ballot for November, and as soon as I get it in September, I'm mailing it back. That way I can check on my vote .wisconsin.gov that the ballot has been received back. And, you know, it's one less thing to worry about on election day. So please, if people want to vote absentee, request your ballots early, ask for help if you need it, and return those ballots early.
And you can take your selfie at the mailbox. Gay Magnifici, President Trump has been dropping comments lately that he's concerned about the accuracy of the 2020 fall election himself. Are you worried about that? And are you hearing from your constituents about voter security and things like mail-in balloting or absentee balloting?
I'm not really worried about our area up here. I think they do a great job. I support early voting, absentee voting, in-person voting. All we have to do is call our clerk, and they will send you a ballot if you don't want to, if you want to vote absentee. And I just want to give a shout out to the clerks too for being so proactive and organized, and they provided a safe and an efficient place to vote. I volunteered at the polls for two of the elections this year, and I was really impressed with the cleanliness and the safety in their polling stations. And then also we have the National Guard helping out, and they did a fantastic job.
Let's go now to our email. And by the way, if you'd like to join us, email is ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. William from Frederick has taken advantage of that and asked this question for both candidates. The majority of Wisconsinites do not think the congressional district maps and the legislative district maps drawn in 2011 were fair, and they want a nonpartisan process used after the current census, and that includes Mr. Johnson himself. Do you think the 2011 maps are fair, and will you be a sponsor of legislation to change to a nonpartisan congressional district map drawing process? And so that, again, he mentions congressional districts, but it also affects the Assembly and Senate districts in the state of Wisconsin. Gabe Magnifici, let's go to you first on that one. The governor has set up a commission, supposedly a bipartisan commission, to help draft fair maps for the after this next census. Are you in favor of that idea?
No, I'm not, because I really don't believe that anyone is truly nonpartisan anymore. Drawing lines will always end up favoring one side or the other, and drawing lines has been clearly delegated to the legislature. That's how it's always been done in the past, and it's worked, and I think it's best to keep that power with the legislature.
And Kim Butler, where are you on redistricting?
Well, I don't think the maps are fair, and what has changed is that now we have sophisticated computer modeling that can slice and dice our districts and create these checkerboard patterns and, you know, cut up. St. Croix County, for example, has four assembly districts. That is hard for voters. It's confusing. That's hard for candidates, and it's hard for political parties. So a nonpartisan redistricting committee along the lines of the Iowa model, where literally an even number of Republicans and Democrats and probably some independents sit in a room, and until they come up with maps that are fair, they don't leave the room. And then the legislature approves. It is something that the legislature has been responsible for in the past, but time and technology changes. And I think that we've proven that both sides do cut the maps to their favor. Democrats do it as well, and I will certainly admit that, but that doesn't make it right. And what we've gotten to now is a whole new level of redistricting. At the county fair in Polk, we've put the legislative maps up for years in our booth, and people see the 7th CD and they laugh because the line is just so crazy, cutting out Stevens Point, which used to be part of the district, and just, you know, how big and how wide that district is. It's 26 counties, full or partial, and that is an enormous task for anyone to try and campaign in or even to represent. That is such a huge district. And so we need to make our districts more compact. They need to follow municipal, county, and geographic lines. And I think that that will make voters and the legislature and candidates and parties all a lot happier. It will make the situation where voters can choose their representatives and not the other way around. We want competitive districts. We want voters' voices to be heard and for them to be able to choose who they think the best candidate is and know that their voice matters.
That's the voice of Kim Butler of Balsam Lake, the Democrat running for the 28th Assembly District. Gabe Magnifici, the current holder of that office, the Republican incumbent, is also with us as we talk about their race for the November election for that seat. Let's go back to the phones now. Alan, you've been waiting a long time. We appreciate your hanging on. And Alan, it's from Amory. Go ahead.
Good morning, Kim and Gay. One of the many disappointments that I have with Governor Evers is his vetoing of four pro-life bills passed by the Wisconsin legislature. And thank you, Gay, for supporting those bills. What will each of you do to fight for those unborn babies that do not have a voice, ensure our unborn and born receive the protections they deserve?
Thank you, Alan. Kim Butler will give you the first crack at the abortion question.
Okay. Good morning, Alan. It's nice to see you. Alan's my colleague, head of the Republican Party in Polk County, I'm pretty sure. My belief is that a woman's decision to carry a pregnancy to term or to put a child up for adoption or to terminate a pregnancy is best made between her and her family, her and her doctor, and her and her faith. And I don't think that the government should be involved in that. On the other hand, I want to make abortion rare. I want to make sure that we have science-based, comprehensive sex education for our young people so that they know, they totally understand how to prevent unwanted pregnancies. And also, we need to make sure that birth control is accessible, affordable, and readily available so that we do make abortion rare for those women who, per their constitutional right, decide to make that choice.
Gay Magnifici, Alan had kind words for you on the topic of abortion, but is there really much the state legislature can do as long as the federal government is saying, you know, abortion is legal and lawful in the United States?
Well, I am going to always support choice of life. I've always been pro-life. I've been endorsed by Wisconsin Right to Life. In this past session, I was proud to co-sponsor and vote on those four abortion bills. One of them prohibited abortions from being performed based on the race, color, ancestry, sex of the unborn child. Another one had to do with born alive survivors. And we actually had two women that came and spoke that were survivors of abortion. I mean, you think it doesn't really happen, but it does. And there was another one, Right to Know. It's about chemical abortion regimes so that they would know how to save their baby if they happen to change their mind after taking the first pill. And the last one was it would just ensure that taxpayer dollars did not subsidize abortion providers, such as Badger Care providers, or redirecting these funds to other medical providers. And we have a local options for women in Osceola, and they do pregnancy tests, ultrasounds, they teach parenting classes, and they provide other resources. So it's just a great nonprofit organization right here in the area, and I really support that.
Let's go to another caller. Let's stay in Amory and go to Mark. Mark, thanks for waiting, and welcome to the West Side.
Hi, thanks for having me, Dean, and thank you so much to Gay for her great representation over the past 2 years. I want to ask about, you know, there's a CNA shortage in Wisconsin, and I think there was a bill this past session that limited the amount of hours or shortened the amount of hours needed to be a CNA. Gay, did you support that bill, and could you elaborate on that a little bit?
And just before you answer, CNA, Certified Nursing Assistants, right?
Correct, Dean.
Yeah. Go ahead, Gay Magnifici.
Yes, I did. And I just want to say I've had the great opportunity to visit several of our long-term care facilities here in the district. I actually have a lot of friends that are in those facilities. And after talking with a lot of the administration, they have voiced that adequate staffing has always been an issue with them. So I was really happy to see that the CNA training bill passed, and it just mirrors the federal standards to 75 hours, and that's the same as Minnesota, Michigan, and Iowa, I think. And I was also really concerned about the needs for PPE and was glad to see that the monies from the CARE Act was going to help the nursing homes. I mean, I just think that these are the people that we really need to protect. And I think the facilities are doing the best that they can, you know, to protect these residents. It's just hard on families not being able to hug their loved ones. And but I really think that the CNA bill is going to, it would help for the fact that there's a lot of people that come, move over here from Minnesota. They have their CNA license, but when they came here, they couldn't work unless they did another 40 hours worth of training, even if they'd had years of experience. So I just think it's a really good thing. It's just small steps. And then also there was monies in the last budget too to help with nursing homes, because a lot of the nursing homes are in Wisconsin have closed just due to lack of payments, and there was money also for caregivers to help with that too. So I think we're going in the right direction. So I just think every little bit helps.
Kim Butler, your focus on the CNA bill, but other things relating to that.
Sure. Well, one reason there's a shortage is that these workers are not compensated adequately. I've volunteered in a nursing home, and I see what an amazing job that they do with the residents, and the amount of care and love that they are giving to the residents of their homes in sometimes difficult situations. But I also know that the nursing homes are feeling a huge financial pinch because they are not getting adequate Medicaid reimbursement for these people. And that's part of the problem, and that's one of the other reasons that we should take the Medicaid expansion money. That would help. And we need to get certified nursing assistants the compensation that they deserve for the difficult job that they do that requires a lot of care and ability on their part. I certainly agree with reciprocal licensing across states, and I will be honest that I am not a nurse and I don't know the ins and outs of the extra hours that are required in Wisconsin, but it is something that the governor signed, so I'm going to trust him on that. But I think that we would definitely help the shortage a lot if these workers were able to be paid more, but that would also mean that the nursing homes would have to get more compensation.
Let's stay on the topic of nursing homes, because that's what Bob from Luck wants to talk about. Bob, welcome to the West Side. Go ahead.
Thank you, Dean. And thank you, Kim and Gay, for having this discussion. Yes, I'm on the nursing homes. My wife is a resident in a nursing home, and I am very, there's talk about the protection and the concern about the elderly in the nursing homes, but very few people realize what the isolation and that's been since March 16th. There has been no visitors allowed inside, and only little opening up that the residents could go outside, but definitely not to visit, hugs and that, on the outside. It just, the fact that the lack of leadership on the testing didn't happen here in Luck until the first case of one of the workers came up, and then the testing became available. The masking, most of them were volunteer masks up until about the same time they came up. The pain on loved ones on the outside not being able to get in, and I see by the lack of, the simple thing of wearing a mask on the outside versus not being able to get in and visit a loved one or have that loved one have somebody by them. And people are still saying, oh, I don't want to wear a mask, wear a mask, or that's an infringement of my rights. Anyway, maybe it's a comment, and I guess it's not in your district, but it's very close, the outbreak at the River Falls nursing home recently. It should be a concern, and it's not getting better. And here we are 5 months into into this lockdown of people in a nursing home. And it's not only nursing home, it's hospitals, veterans homes, mm-hmm. every place. So I'd like to have both comments on from both on what they think should be done.
Bob, thank you for sharing your story. Kim Butler, your response.
Well, I just kept thinking that this is like pulling off a Band-Aid in slow motion. It hurts more. We should have just dealt with this in the beginning. We knew that nursing homes were a hot spot and an issue back in February and early March based on what was happening in Washington State with the nursing homes there. And, yes, Bob brings up a lot of concerns that families and the residents of these homes are separated from each other. And if a resident is in, you know, has dementia or any number of symptoms that might prevent them from fully understanding what's going on, they're in a lot of emotional pain not being able to see their loved ones, as are their family members who, you know, want to visit, want to be there every day, want to be able to visit and show, you know, the new grandchild or any number of things. So I think that we need to, you know, enforce the mask mandate. This is like, you know, in the Blitz in London. People didn't turn their headlights on. They didn't turn their lights on at night because it was for the greater good. You had to suffer a little to get rid of it, get through it. And that's what we need to do. We need to think of the collective benefit to everybody and to our society of wearing a mask, doing all the things that we need to do, including, as Gay mentions, hand washing and sanitizing and testing. We need to ramp up testing. Still, the state government, the health department was saying the other day that they're still missing reagent for their testing and that it's not going as quickly as they would like. And sadly, that's because of all the delay that came from D.C. and the White House, that we didn't get ahead of this back in January and February when we knew that it was an issue. Most people knew it was an issue. My husband and I changed plans in February for a business trip because we were concerned about the growing news that we were hearing from China, and we didn't necessarily want to be in a public situation at a convention in Las Vegas with lots of manufacturers from all over the world. And so we knew this was here, and we didn't get on top of the testing quickly enough. Now we need to do everything we can to mask, to get the testing up, and to try and get back to normal.
Kay Magnifici, let you respond to Bob, but I'll also throw in a comment from Cheryl in Osceola, who says, the COVID-19 virus resides in the nose passages and the throat and mouth. It's spread by talking, coughing, sneezing, even breathing. That's why masks are needed. Gabe Magnifici, as a nurse, you should recognize that. So I'll let you respond to both those comments, and then we'll go to a break.
Yes, I do recognize that. Then also, I suppose you should be wearing eye shields of some sort because that can get into your eyes and cause it too. But I just think masks should be worn appropriately in appropriate conditions. And as far as the nursing homes go, like I said, I think they're doing the best that they can to protect the loved ones there. But I know I volunteer there at nursing home ice thing and it, try to entertain the residents. We play outside and try to keep a safe distance to keep everyone safe. And I feel for these families that aren't able to, you know, hug their loved ones. And that's about it.
Thank you much. Our guests today are the incumbent state representative from Wisconsin District 28, Gay Magnifici, the Republican from Dresser, that's the voice you just heard, and her challenger in the November election, the chair of the Democratic Party of the 7th Congressional District, Kim Butler of Balsam Lake. So what's the issue you want to hear these candidates talk about? Call 800-228-5615 or email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're talking to the candidates in the 28th Assembly District race coming up in November. They are incumbent Republican Gay Magnifici of Dresser and Democrat Kim Butler of Balsam Lake. We've been talking a lot about health, but it's an important topic, I know to both of you, health insurance is another area that remains a contentious issue. Kim Butler, you're in favor of Badger Care for All. Tell us how that would work and how Wisconsin could afford it.
Well, one of the reasons I'm running is that 14 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer, and my husband and I own a small business, so we have been paying for private insurance since we moved here in 2001. And when I moved from Minnesota to Wisconsin, my rates almost doubled and my coverage was halved. They were able to rider out a lot of pre-existing conditions like allergies, and they didn't cover any prescription drugs, and this was before the Affordable Care Act. So now, obviously, I have an even bigger pre-existing condition, and it is essential to me that we make sure that pre-existing conditions are covered. The legislature did pass a bill in 2019, but it really didn't guarantee coverage to people. I want to open up Badger Care as a public option that people have the choice to buy into. Long ago, before the ACA, when my family had three insurance policies for a family of four, one of those policies was Badger Care for my children that I was able to pay into to purchase coverage for them. And I myself was in the high-risk pool and was able to purchase that coverage because I had been denied coverage elsewhere. You know, hundreds of other countries, scores of other countries have health care as a right for their citizens, and they don't leave it up to the private market. And we found that it's just too expensive. So Badger Care is a wonderful system. It's popular. I've met a lot of people when I was door knocking and before the COVID shutdown that have their kids on Badger Care, but they themselves cannot afford insurance coverage for themselves. And we have thousands of people in the 28th District that have no insurance whatsoever. And in a normal year, that's not acceptable. But for people to be uninsured during a pandemic is, you know, outright wrong. It's morally wrong. And it endangers everyone else, too. You know, we need to make sure that people can afford and access the health care that they need.
Kay Magnifici, you spent your career as a registered nurse, and you serve on the Assembly Committee on Aging and Long-Term Care and the Assembly Committee on Health. What's your approach to health insurance, and how does your experience in the healthcare field inform that approach?
Well, I just feel that everyone living at or below the poverty line is still eligible to receive medical assistance through the state-run Badger Care. And everyone above that poverty line can still receive insurance through their employer, or they can buy their insurance on their own through the Affordable Care Act. It just, to me, it's just, if you're accepting a Medicaid expansion, there's always strings attached to that. And a lot of people still like their private insurance. And I still believe that the only way to keep our costs down for everyone is through competition.
Let's switch topics. Last fall, Governor Evers called a special session of the legislature to take up two gun control measures, one a red flag bill that would allow family members or police to ask a court to take firearms from an individual who's considered dangerous. The other is to implement stricter background checks. Rather than vote on the legislation, the Republican leadership gaveled in and then adjourned those sessions in under a minute. Gay Magnifici, if you're elected, where would you be willing to go as far as gun control legislation is concerned?
As of right now, I think we have enough gun laws out there. I have purchased several guns myself, and there is a big questionnaire that you have to go through. And as far as the red flag law, I mean, you're already saying somebody's guilty before they're even, you lose your due process of law. So I just feel we have enough gun laws on the books now.
Kim Butler, same question.
Well, both of those measures are extremely popular on a bipartisan level. People respect that the police and the courts will proceed extremely carefully before they take away somebody's guns. But in the case of someone who is showing mental illness, who is a confirmed domestic abuser or a sexual predator or whatever, those people should not have guns if they're a danger to themselves or to their family members or other people. And I trust our courts and our law enforcement officials to make those decisions with the seriousness that they should. My family owns guns. I support the Second Amendment, but I also want to keep our school children and our citizens safe. Background checks, you know, when I go to Walmart to buy my sinus medicine, I have to sign a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Owning a gun is a right, but it is also a responsibility. And signing, going through a background check is, you know, something that unfortunately we just need to do to make sure that guns are kept in the hands of responsible people. And I know the argument is that criminals are still going to get them. Yeah, they are. But we have to try something, and the majority of people believe that both background checks and the extreme violence protection orders will help minimize our gun risk.
We've got just 2 minutes left, and I wanted to get to the topic of CAFOs. Burnett County passed a year-long moratorium on large-scale farms, often called concentrated animal feed operations, or CAFOs, last August. Not long before that moratorium passed, there was an Iowa company that announced its proposal for a hog farm with up to 26,000 hogs in Trade Lake area of Burnett County. Gay Magnifici, how do you envision the relationship between local and state governments on topics like CAFOs?
Well, when I hear the word CAFO, I think of a lot of government regulations. They have to go through a huge process to even be able to do this. So I'm in total support of farmers. I guess what really bothers me sometimes is when you hear of these people buying property and they come from a different state or even a different country and they want to start doing this. I think it'd be great if you could, the people that are going to run it, live there.
Kim Butler, go ahead.
Okay. No, go ahead.
I don't have issue with the family-owned and operated dairy CAFOs that we have in our county. I've visited some. I know how seriously these farmers take the health and welfare of their animals, of their family. Their kids are drinking the water. They're going to church and going to the store with their neighbors, and they're going to be good stewards of the land. That is their tradition. But I don't see a corporation bringing 26,000 hogs, and an adult sow creates the 10 times the amount of waste of an adult human. So that's like a city of, you know, almost 260,000 people with no real waste facility treatment plant, and we would never allow that. Polk County, in particular, has a $90 million tourism industry. The lake home owners pay about half of the county budget. And from an economic standpoint, we need to protect our resources here. We have beautiful outdoor resources that attract people from all over the world. We have lake homeowners that come from all over the state and Minnesota to enjoy our clean, pristine lakes, and we must make sure that we protect those. I don't see the benefit to the 28th District of having outside farms where people don't live here, the owners don't live here, bringing in such an enormous number of hogs. Who is going to benefit except that corporation? Basically, we are growing pork for China, and that does not benefit people in the 28th District, and it puts our clean surface water and our clean well water at risk.
And that's our time for today. Thank you to our candidates, Gay Magnifici and Kim Butler, facing each other in November in the race for the 28th Assembly District. Catherine Thomas produced today's program. Kate Spranger managed the publicity. Next week, the 87th District debate. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dean Kallenbeck. You're listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network.